just wanted to close, really. I know we've touched on the spiritual aspects of depression a bit as we've gone through, because I don't think you can put them in separate boxes and say this is the sickness, this is spiritual, this is social. They all and link in, and spiritual is probably at the core of things in a way, of everything. But depression always, I think, has a spiritual aspect, whether people acknowledge it or not. Not because it always has a spiritual cause as such, but it affects people's spiritual life. It may make them think about what life means. It may also make it more difficult to have the normal Christian experience that they think. It might make coming to church difficult. There are all those kind of things. Because when Christians become depressed, they often do find it hard to have any sense of God's presence. Concentration on Bible study and prayer can become difficult, if not impossible. And feeling that God is there can be very difficult. It can seem that just there's nothing, or worse, if God has turned his back on them. And so I was talking about, in severe depression that is associated with psychosis, or not even quite as far as that, there can be this sense in the belief that God has abandoned them. William Cowper, the poet and hymn writer, and he at times in his severest depression believed that there was salvation, but not for him. And people who sometimes, I remember as a medical student being allocated to a lady with depression who was a Christian, and I struggled greatly with it because she kept on saying, well, yeah, but that applies to everybody else, but it doesn't apply to me. I can't repent. I think I committed the unforgivable sin, and no amount of my earnest efforts as a Christian medical student could help her see it differently. And it floored me quite severely, in fact, that I thought maybe psychiatry wasn't the field I should take, because I just couldn't help this person at all. So in the severest depression, as I say, it can feel like God is not there, or not that God is not there, but that God is there for everybody else, but not for the person themselves. So, and then there's also the guilt of feeling like this. You know, Christians shouldn't, or it's not a very good advert for the gospel, or I ought to be happy, or it says, you know, that the teaching is Christians are always happy or they're always joyful, and I'm not, so therefore I can't be a very good Christian. They say that's why the Christian CBT book, I think they've titled it, I'm Not Supposed to Feel Like This, because that's so often what Christians say. But on the other converse, that sometimes depression is the thing that leads a person to look for a different way of life. So some people will say, you know, before I became a Christian, I was very low. I was looking for something, I didn't know what, but I felt terrible. And then I became a Christian and suddenly earth above is sweeter blue, or earth around is sweeter green, and things look better when you become a Christian. That is the experience for some people, but it's not for everyone. Working through the CBT kind that I mentioned, the cognitive behaviour therapy kind of approach, can identify thought patterns that are not just unhelpful, but that are actually wrong. And Romans 12, Paul talks about having our minds renewed, and Philippians, he talks about thinking about things that are good and true. So there's an awful lot more in the Bible about how we think and about the things we think about and how we think. But as I said, we have to be careful of treading the line between making the individual feel that he or she is completely to blame for the way that they are, and helping them recognize and address wrong patterns of thinking. So it's not always an easy line to tread, but people do need to be able to address and recognize their thinking patterns. Somebody mentioned about depression in the Bible and the examples, and my question is there depression in the Bible? And I think you can read different books and decide different things about whether there's depressive illness as such in the Bible, but I think there is enough about low mood and symptoms that might suggest that the Bible has got things to say about depression. But which biblical passages actually do or don't describe it sometimes is open to debate. But it's, I think it's very clear that anxiety, anyway, and fear are part of our fallen state. Adam's first reaction in the Garden of Eden was to God was, "I was afraid." Saw God and he was afraid. And a kind of, like a holy fear was replaced by a shameful fear. And that stayed with us to some extent. We have still that tendency. In Deuteronomy, the children of Israel were told that if they didn't go God's way, they would experience a trembling heart and failing eyes and a languishing soul. Your life shall hang in doubt before you. Night and day you shall be in dread and have no assurance of your life. In the morning you shall say, "If only it were evening," and at evening you will say, "If only it were morning," because of the dread that your heart shall feel and the sights that your eyes shall see. Again, that's not a passage to give to an individual and say, "Here you are. Obviously, your sin has caused your state." But as part of us, we are susceptible to those kind of things in the state of the fallenness and rebellion against God that there is in the world.
Could you give us
the reference? Sorry, that's Deuteronomy 28 and 64 following. I was finding in 1 Samuel where 21, where David feigns madness before Abimelech, then Achish, the king of Gath, he struck me that in those days madness was recognized. There was something recognized as mental illness, whether it was exactly the same as what we would. They knew that he was mad and therefore not responsible for what he was doing. David, the psalm that seems to. That probably goes with that is Psalm 34. And if you look at Psalm 34, where David is describing how it's of David when he changed his behavior before Abimelech, he describes feeling quite low. And presumably, in a sense, if he's written it at this time, this was what David himself was experiencing. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him. He was feeling quite bereft, quite low. He talked about being brokenhearted. In verse 18, he talks about the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. And if that psalm was written at that time when David was in that place in his life, then that is presumably how he felt, brokenhearted and crushed in spirit, afflicted. So I think that there, although he feigned madness, he was going through a very real experience of being in trouble, low and anxious. Elijah is often quoted as an example of depression and his experience after Mount Carmel. I don't know if any of you read Dale Ralph Davies, but his commentary on this chapter of 1 Kings 19 is, "Let not the psychotherapists win." He doesn't want this to be an analysis of Elijah's psychological condition in a sense of saying that he was just suffering from depression. I tend to agree. When you see all that Elijah went through, not that his response is he was a perfect man, but the heights of kind of spiritual experience, of physical threat that he was under, exhaustion, huge emotional intensity, huge spiritual intensity of a spiritual battle. I think it's hardly surprising that Elijah was exhausted in every way. He was done out and worn out. And God's care of him is a wonderful example of restoring him in every which way, both in terms of physical restoration, sleep and food, in terms of emotional restoration. He was given time to express, "What are you doing here, Elijah? Tell me." And he had an opportunity to express what he was feeling, what he'd gone through, and God listened to him. God then gently told him some other things that were also true, but he gave him the opportunity to say what he had gone through. and restored him and then sent him out again. So I think that this is an example of good care for people who are stressed and a good encouragement to us, and also helpful to realize that after periods of great spiritual intensity, maybe for preachers or ministers of the word or other people who give out hugely at one time, there may be a subsequent reaction, and that is not abnormal. It can something that can be sometimes even expected. So you can maybe decide for yourself whether you think Elijah was suffering from depression or not, but it's still got a lot to tell us about care for people and about how God cares for us in the way we feel. Psalm 42 and 43, that was like it was one psalm, are also a fairly good psalms for being cast down. The recurrent theme is hope in God, you know, for I shall again praise him. So the hope theme is there throughout, but there's also the pouring out of how the person feels in all their distress, in all their questioning, and also at talking to themselves, which is often depression. Somebody says, talk. We need not to talk always to other people, but also to talk to ourselves, to tell ourselves the things that are true. So talking to ourselves. John Piper refers to a thing called gutsy guilt, which he says is the kind of reaction that fights to apply forgiveness, that actually struggles, works hard at applying these truths to our own lives. And so, say, Psalm 42 and 43 has got that. The psalm says, why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God. So the psalmist is talking to themselves about God and struggling to remember the good things about God while at the same time feeling that all the breakers and waves have gone over them, that they're being overwhelmed by what's happening, by how they're feeling as well. And I referred earlier to William Cowper. He throughout his life struggled with depression and probably actually died in a state of quite severe depression. And he made suicidal attempts. But he wrote in his poem that we sing as a hymn, sometimes God moves in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. He says, judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust him for his grace. Behind a frowning providence, he hides a smiling face. And there are other examples of Christians, many of them, Spurgeon, a consultant pediatrician that I heard speak recently, who's written a lot about medical ethics, who himself went through a very severe depression. And as I said, Marjorie Foyle, who has written her autobiography recently, a psychiatrist who worked for many years in India and then came back and helped to found InterHealth. There are many, many, many more examples of people who have found that God is still there, even though depression may seem to hide him and may be a difficult experience to go through. We have a God in whom we can hope. Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn. I think we all really appreciate the sensitive way and the expert and insightful way that you've really dealt with this subject, which is so tender. And we really appreciate your time, the way you've poured yourself into it.